we get started today, we talked last time about where are we going to go, you know, with this class. And right at the moment, what I'm doing is continuing to work my way through Exodus, but that won't take very much longer. And unless some other epiphany comes in, we'll move over and start at Numbers 10 probably and move forward from there. Today, you'll find that when we get into the portions we're going to read, it's a little bit repetitive of what we've done before. And I went back and forth with sort of jumping over that because we've read it several times, but then realized, you know, it's been a while since we talked about the details. And I thought, well, you know, we at least can read it. It won't take long to read it. So we'll at least read those words and look at them and make the most of what we can see there. Last time we finished up chapters 35 and 36, where Moses had called all the skillful men together to build the tabernacle in accordance with God's directions. He made it clear to them that God by name had selected Bezalel and Aholiab to be the leaders in that. Bezalel was the main leader, and so they're going to do that and lead that charge with the skilled craftsmen of Israel. But Moses starts with a call for an offering, and that had been commanded by God earlier. It was to be a freewill offering only for those who had moved hearts to give. And they gave all the supplies that were to be needed, the metal, the fabrics, the wood, precious stones, and so on. And Moses is turning these offerings as they come in over to Bezalel and the team that's going to construct the ark. And the workmen gather together at one point, and they go to Moses, and they say, tell the people to stop. We've got enough. We don't need more offerings. And so Moses indeed takes that to the people, and it stops. And that moves us over into chapter 36, starting in verse 8. Bezalel and his team are recorded to be building the components just as God ordered. The list is very detailed, and we talked about them before we got done last time about 2 Corinthians 9, 6, and 7, where when Paul's collecting the offering, he too said, give as each one has decided in his heart, for God loves a cheerful giver. We also talked about 1 Corinthians 12, where the human body is used as an analogous way to think about the body of Christ. And Paul makes a point there that all the members of the body are very important. And you can't look at somebody else in the body and say, well, I'm not like them, so I'm of no value. And also somebody else can't look at you and go, well, you're not like us, so you're of no value. No, God puts the body together just as he wishes, and all the members are important to its success. And last time then, when we started with chapter 36, verse 8, and finished out chapter 36, that last part we see Bezalel and his team constructing all the components that will go into the structure of the tabernacle part itself. Well, I'm a little dry this morning all of a sudden. And so they build the structural components of the tabernacle. And we're going to start in today then in Exodus chapter 37. And we're going to read the construction of the various components that will be used within the worship and that God had commanded to be built. So first of all, I'm going to read Exodus 37, 1 through 9. This is the construction of the ark. Now Bezalel made the ark of acacia wood. Its length was to be 2.5 cubits. Its width was 1.5 cubits. And its height was 1.5 cubits. And he overlaid it with pure gold inside and out and made a gold molding for it all around. He cast 4 rings of gold on its 4 feet, even 2 rings on one side and 2 on the other side. He made poles of acacia wood and overlaid them with gold. He put the poles into the rings into the sides of the ark to carry it. He made a mercy seat of pure gold 2.5 cubits long and 1.5 cubits wide. He made 2 cherubim of gold. He made them hammered work at the 2 ends of the mercy seat. One cherub at one end of the and 1 cherub at the other end. He made the cherubim of one piece with the mercy seat at the 2 ends. The cherubim had their wings spread upward, covering the mercy seat with their wings, with their faces toward each other, and the faces of the cherubim were toward the mercy seat. So he made the ark, and you can see all the details there. The 1.5 cubits turns out to be just a little less than 2 feet, so it was about 2 feet square on the end, and its height was about 2 feet, and so he made it with just these same instructions that God had directed back on the mountain. Now, I put some of the past things we have handed out back there on the table if anybody wanted to look at them. I did not include the one for the ark. I realized that this morning that, oh, I wish I had put that one in there too. But so this ark was made. It's going to be in the Holy of Holies, as you recall. And so that construction is completed. So let's look at verses 10 through 16. And this is the showbread table. Then he made the table of acacia wood, 2 cubits long and 1 cubit wide, and 1.5 cubits high. He overlaid it with pure gold and made a gold molding for it all around. He made a trim for it of a handbreadth all around and made a gold molding for its rim all around. He cast 4 rings for it and put its rings on the 4 corners that were on the 4 feet. Close by the rim were the rings, the holders for the poles to carry the table. He made the poles of acacia wood and overlaid them with gold to carry the table. He made the utensils which were on the table, its dishes and its pans and its bowls and its jars with which to pour out drink offerings of pure gold. So the next thing he makes is the showbread table. And if you remember, the showbread table is going to be on one side of the holy place. And I'm sorry. Yeah. No, yes, but what's on the other side? The showbread? The lamp. Yeah, the lampstand's going to be on the other side.
It's all in this picture, even
yeah,
this
okay. I know.
Sorry.
I'm just.
Sorry.
Yeah. So. No, you're fine. Just let me continue, and I'll do all right. She's just working at it. I appreciate it. So the table, you know, so far we've seen a lot of gold being used, haven't we? When we get it, I don't know, most classes when I walk in, I have a pretty good idea, plus or minus 5 or 10 minutes, how the class is going to go. Today, we are either going to run out of clock at one point, or we're going to run out of material. I have no idea which one will come first and when it will happen. Okay? So if we get to the end, if we get to the end of what I've got down here that we could cover, we're going to see just how much gold and silver and bronze went into the workings of putting together the tabernacle and its furniture, and it's rather amazing. So let's go on to the golden lampstand now. And look at that, that's 17 through 24. And that, you do have a, I did bring this back, and I'll remind you that the lampstand for the tabernacle was for 7 lamps, while the menorah is not 7, it's 8, right? So it's a little bit different than the menorah that would be used later on in Jewish worship. This one's particular towards 7. But in verse 17 it begins, then he made the lampstand of pure gold. He made the lampstand of a hammered work. Its base and its shaft, its cups, its bulbs, its flowers were of one piece with it. There were 6 branches. I said that wrong. This and 6. No. There. Oh, 6 branches and one in the middle. There were 6 branches going out of the sides and 3 branches from one side of it and 3 branches from the other side of it. 3 cups shaped like almond blossoms, a bulb and a flower and one branch and three cups shaped like, my eyes jumped on me. In one branch and three cups like almond blossoms, a bulb and a flower in the other branch. So for the six branches then going out of the lampstand, in the lampstand there were four cups shaped like almond blossoms, its bulbs and its flowers. And a bulb was under the first pair of branches coming out of it, and a bulb under the second pair of branches coming out of it, and a bulb under the third pair of branches coming out of it, for the six branches coming out of the lampstand. Their bulbs and their branches were of one piece with it, and the whole was a single hammered work of pure gold. He made its seven lamps with its snuffers and its trays of pure gold. He made it and all of its utensils from a talent of pure gold. Its utensils from a talent of pure gold. One of the things we could get to today, we'll see, includes looking at how much is a talent. And I've got resources that would say a talent was 94 pounds. I've got resources that would say it was 60. I've got resources that would say it's 120. And I'm not going to take you through this, but interestingly enough, I did some of the math right in this book. And if you do the math, it comes out to 94 pounds that I got out of Exodus. If the shekel is a half an ounce, which everybody pretty much agreed on that. And if a shekel's a half an ounce, then a talent has to be 94 pounds because there's 3,000 shekels in one talent. But just read that line again. He made all of its utensils. So this is just the utensils, not the lampstand itself, from a talent of pure gold. 94 pounds is what it took, roughly, to make the utensils that went along with this golden lampstand. That's a lot of gold, just for the utensils. So we've got the golden lampstand. Now, also in this area is the altar of incense. And so that starts in verse 25, and we can read that together. Then he made the altar of incense of acacia wood, a cubit long and a cubit wide square, and two cubits high. Its horns were of one piece with it. He overlaid it with pure gold, its top and its sides all around, and its horns, and he made a gold molding for it all around. He made two golden rings for it under the molding on its two sides, on opposite sides, as holders for poles with which to carry it. He made the poles of acacia wood and overlaid them with gold, and he made the holy anointing oil for the pure, fragrant incense of spices, the work of a perfumer. And so the team, you know, it says he here, and so Bezalel was the one responsible and in charge, and he and his team, under his very careful direction, I'm sure, made the golden the altar of incense, and then the anointing oil and the incense to be used in the tabernacle. And so all of those things are produced. And that takes us to chapter 38, where it just simply continues. And so talking about the completion of the tabernacle, he made these are additional pieces in verse 31 of 8. We'll read the first eight verses to begin with. Then he made the altar of burnt offering of acacia wood, five cubits long, five cubits wide, square, and three cubits high. He made its horns on its four corners, its horns being of one piece with it. And he overlaid it with bronze. He made all the utensils of the altar, the pails and the shovels and the basins, the flesh hooks and the fire pans. He made all its utensils of bronze. He made for the altar a grating of bronze network beneath under its ledge, reaching halfway up. He cast four rings on the four ends of the bronze grating as holders for the poles. He made the poles of acacia wood and overlaid them with bronze. He inserted the poles into the rings on the sides of the altar with which to carry it. He made it hollow with planks. And so we've got the altar now that's made of bronze that will be used for the burnt sacrifices. And so let's go on from there. And he also made the laver. I don't want to skip that. Let's read verse 8. Moreover, he made the laver of bronze and with its base of bronze from the mirrors of the serving women who served at the doorway at the tent of the meeting. It's an interesting side note we get there on that bronze laver. It was made out of mirrors. I don't know if this is the frame for some other mirror or if they polished bronze to use for a mirror. They had silver. I would have thought that would have made a better mirror than bronze would. But some portion of those mirrors that the women used who used to attend to the tent of the meeting at the doorway is what he made the laver of bronze from. And that laver, you remember there, is part of ceremonial cleanings that the priests had to go through in the course of the worship and the sacrifices and so on that they would be doing. And I was right on the time. We're going to run out of material in a hurry, but that's okay. Let's look at Exodus then 38, 9 through 20. And here we make the court of the temple. This is now we're moving out into the boundary that's going to be set up with all of the poles and the fabrics in order to make the court that goes around the temple, kind of treating it like a portable compound area is what I was trying to say. So beginning in verse 9, then he made the court for the south side. The hangings of the court were of fine twisted linen, 100 cubits. By the way, I probably didn't say this. I talked about dimension a little bit, but a cubit was about 15 inches, maybe 18 inches, depending on, these were probably 18 actually. And so it was about 100 cubits. There are 20 pillars, there are 20 sockets made of bronze. The hooks of the pillars and their bands were of silver. For the north side, there were 100 cubits, their 20 pillars and their 20 sockets were of bronze. The hooks of the pillars and their bands were of silver. For the west side, there were hangings of 50 cubits with their 10 pillars and their 10 sockets. The hooks of the pillars and their bands were of silver. For the east side, 50 cubits. The hangings for one side of the gate were 15 cubits with their three pillars and their three sockets. And so for the other side, on both sides of the gate of the court were hangings of 15 cubits with three pillars and their three sockets. All of the hangings of the court all around were of fine twisted linen. The sockets for the pillars were of bronze, the hooks of the pillars and their bands of silver, and the overlaying of their tops of silver, and all the pillars of their court were furnished with silver bands. The screen of the gate and the court of the work was a weaver. Did I read it right? The screen of the gate and the court was the work of the weaver, of blue and purple and scarlet material and fine twisted linen. And the length was 20 cubits, and the height was 5 cubits, corresponding to the hangings of the court. Their four pillars and their four sockets were of bronze, their hooks were of silver, and the overlaying of their tops and their bands were of silver. All the pegs of the tabernacle of the court all around were of bronze. And so that longer passage is talking about, I'll get it here, this court all the way around the temple as well as the making of its gate area. And so that printout is back there if you don't remember it. We're going to get some more details before we're done about the quantity of metals that went into parts of this. But it's a very elaborate thing, and so too is the tabernacle, which we read about last week, which I brought you in this representation, just to kind of help us visualize it. And so you can imagine this was quite a project, building everything that we've talked about so far, and we're not quite done yet. Well, I guess we're done with the building. And I really found this next part kind of fascinating. Beginning in verse 21 in chapter 38, it says, "This is the number of the things for the tabernacle of the testimony, as they were numbered according to the command of Moses for the services of the Levites by the hand of Ithamar, the son of Aaron the priest." So what is Ithamar's job? What's that? He's the accountant for the project. Now the next two verses make it pretty clear that Bezalel, the son of Uri, the son of Hur, of the tribe of Judah, made all that the Lord had commanded Moses, and with him was Aholiab, the son of Amishmach, the tribe of Dan, an engraver and a skillful workman and a weaver in blue and in purple and in scarlet material and fine linen. So they were the constructors, but while they're constructing, Ithamar is there being the accountant, keeping track of everything that was going on that went into the building of the tabernacle. And so it becomes kind of interesting. First of all, let's look at verse 24. Verse 24 says, "All the gold that was used for the work, all the work of the sanctuary, even the gold of the wave offering, was 29 talents and 730 shekels, according to the shekel of the sanctuary." So there's the statement from the accountant about, or at least it's from Moses, but reporting on what the accountant measured with regard to how much gold was used, and it was 29 talents. And if we go with the 94.4 pounds per talent, that comes up to be just over 2,700 pounds, 2,737 pounds of gold. If we were to convert that to ounces, and the last time we did this, I made an error that's not huge, but it is different. I converted it to our English system ounces, but I really should have converted it to troy ounces. They're a little bit smaller, a little bit larger. But if we converted that to troy ounces, that would be 39,923 plus a little more troy ounces of gold. And these have to be considered estimates because don't have it exactly. I'm sorry, I'm wrong. I left out the 333 shekels. Comes to a little over 40,000. It's 40,256 troy ounces, roughly, of gold if you put all of that together. So if you had to buy it today, yesterday gold was plus or minus $2,900 an ounce, a troy ounce. So that would just be $116,742,000 worth of gold if you were buying it today. Obviously, the price of gold fluctuates based on demand and a few other things. So I don't know what it was like in their economy when they looked at gold and what they considered it to be. Now, he said that this came out of the wave offering. And I stumbled over that for a while. But eventually, I think I found the right way to understand that, because I'm looking for a wave offering. Remember when the instructions were given to Moses on the ceremony for bringing Aaron and his family into the temple and dedicating them for their service? Part of what they did was, in one of the sacrifices, portions of the meat were kept, and they waved them before the Lord, and that was their wave offering as they were bringing them into their service and dedicating them for the temple per the instructions given Moses. But they're also, term wave offering could also be a general offering, a special offering. I don't know that they got out and waved these things as they brought them before Moses. The consensus amongst virtually everybody I looked at said, well, this is the special offering that they had in order to gather the materials to build the tabernacle with. So out of their giving, they gave about 2,740 pounds of gold that went into building the temple. In verses 25 and 26, then, it talks about the silver that was involved. And 25 says, the silver of those of the congregation who were numbered was 100 talents and 1,775 shekels, according to the shekel of the sanctuary, a beka a head, that is, half a shekel, according to the shekel of the sanctuary, for each one who passed over those who were numbered from 20 years old and upward, for 603,550 men. And so this is the source of the silver. I should have, and I didn't, give us that reference. But if you remember, Moses was commanded to take a half shekel in the course of doing a census that would determine how many people they had that were of fighting age. So the men were counted that were 20 years old and older. And they were instructed, as they were counted, to give a half shekel for their deliverance as they were counted in this process of taking the census. And that half shekel then is where we get the 100 talents plus 1,775 shekels. And so they made that contribution. They were told, actually, to give a beka, which is the term half shekel. And the interesting thing is, and this is where I could verify the math, if you have 603,550 men, and you multiply that by the half shekel, that's going to give you the 100 talents, and I'm sorry, the 100, I wrote that down wrong. I know I did, because that isn't the right thing. That gives you the 100 talents plus, you still have another 1,775 shekels. So the math comes out perfectly, and I was pleased that I was able to do that, just the math guy in me, I guess. But that all comes out because there's 3,000 shekels in a talent. You take and do the math on all that, and you'll get 100 talents with another 1,775 shekels. And so if you continue with that, let's look at 27 and 28 and see what they did with that silver. The 100 talents of silver were for casting of the sockets of the sanctuary and the sockets of the veil, 100 sockets for the 100 talents, a talent for a socket. Of the 1,775 shekels, he made hooks for the pillars and overlaid their tops and their bands for them. And so if you look at, and I'm not sure which one of these drawings you can see it or it does it the best, but well, let's start here. If you look at that one, the top of the page there, you see the one with the tenons, and then it has the sockets shown next to it. Those are the silver sockets up here. Each socket had one, it was for one board that would have two tenons poking down into it. Those are what went on the ground. You can see their intention to display them here. They were what went on the ground to hold the boards that were the structure of the tabernacle. And it talks about them here and says there were 100 of them. It took 94 pounds, one talent of silver for every socket. That's a lot of silver. That's a lot of weight. And so the next thing you can start thinking about as we're listing things here, we've so far looked at a lot of metal. You've got not quite 5 tons of metal of silver sockets. We had less than 2 tons, I don't remember the exact number now, in gold. We had about not quite a ton and a half of gold. And we haven't, we're just talking about those metal pieces so far. How would you like to be on the crew to move and set up the tabernacle? Now, you got to realize, it's not going to be five of you doing it, right? God assigned who would be doing this, and it was going to be more than a person or two, but it's going to be quite a challenge. Let's look at verse 29. In verse 29 it says, of the 1,775 shekels, now this is the remainder of the silver that didn't go into making the sockets, he made hooks for the pillars and overlaid their tops and made the bands for them. So there's a lot of silver that still goes into the mechanical pieces and parts that are going to hold up the fabrics and hook things together. And so there's a lot of silver involved in doing this. Questions or comments so far?
Rick, you talked about the weight. And I keep going back to, they brought this out of Egypt with them.
Uh-huh.
Plus what they used to make the golden calf.
Uh-huh.
They were toting a lot of weight with them. I mean, I know there were a lot of people, but...
Yeah, and I, you know, it would, I remember just enough of the movie that Mills made, he showed them with wagons and animals leaving. So did they have wagons? Did they have carts? I don't know. I know that if you had been a sharp person and figured out a way to provide some carts real quickly, they'd have been happy with you. They needed something to make it a little easier, I would say. But I don't know how they managed that. Of course, if you think back a little bit, when they made the golden calf, what did they use?
Earrings.
It was just earrings, and they had enough gold for the golden calf. So, and I don't know that there was a gender thing about wearing earrings at the time. I think the men probably did too, by the way some of this is worded. So, you know, I guess everybody might have had a lot of bracelets. I don't know how that all went. Yes, sir.
In the more than Korea had a large community of Jewish people. They came here to go to C of E or Emporia State to get a draft firm. I had 3 Jewish roommates who took great pride, and they often said, only Jews could accumulate this kind of wealth while in slavery, because you Goyans could never do it.
Yeah. Well, and of course, you remember, they didn't just do it by being slaves either, did they? They reached a point where they were going, take it all, we don't care. If you stay, we're going to die. So,
I like to think about this too, because when you talk about the type of jewelry that was used to create the golden calf, like the majority of this probably came from household idols and religious objects. You know what I'm saying? And so I think that it's just interesting for me to consider. And the text doesn't say that, but I like to conjecture that God can make holy things that were unholy, things that were unfit, and being used to worship demons, God can take and remake for his own glory. Really, like, just a picture of the gospel. But it doesn't say that, but I like to think that. Yeah.
Well, and you can take that same thought. Let's jump ahead and say it happened in the modern era. And a group of people have to be refugees and leave an era. We've seen that happen, haven't we? Imagine these folks as refugees with all this gold and wealth. Do you think they might have been a little attached to it? In modern days, I lost my home. I'm a wandering person out here, and you want what? You want my gold? Now, that isn't the way they reacted, because they gave out of the heart. Only the people that were moved gave. But so this was maybe a partly, too, a way of God had of diminishing their attachment to their physical possessions a bit. You want to worship me, or do you want to have all this stuff? And so, at any rate, they're giving it up. So continuing with where we were in verse, I just read verse 29. Maybe I didn't. Let me read verse 29. The bronze of the wave offering was 70 talents and 2,400 shekels. With it, he made the sockets to the doorway of the tent of the meeting, and the bronze altar, and the bronze grating, and all the utensils of the altar, and the sockets of the court all around, and the sockets of the court, and of all the pegs of the tabernacle, and all the pegs of the court all around. So it's interesting that as they accounted for it, they said the wave offering amounted to 70 talents and 2,400 shekels. You work the math all out on that, you'll get about 665 pounds of bronze that went into these bronze pieces he made. But don't forget what happened up in verse 8, because this didn't happen in the wave offering, I don't think. I don't know. Maybe it was part of the wave offering, but people knew it came in. But remember, what did he make the laver out of? The mirrors of the women who tended to the door of the place of meeting. And so that probably was in addition to, or at least was separated out as a part of this wave offering. And so for whatever reason, that got some special attention. And so he's made all of these bronze items, took about 6,700 pounds, 6,655 pounds of bronze for them to make. So this is much more dramatic than I expected in terms of that. That's what I thought would take about an hour to do this morning, and it didn't. But it is pretty amazing when we get into garments, and certainly we could go ahead and read through that, but I think I'm not quite sure where my good stopping and starting points might be. But let me start into that. We've got 20 minutes here, and I would like to move this forward. Before I do, any questions, more questions or comments about the building of the tabernacle and what went into it?
Did you ever total up all the tonnage?
I didn't, but that would be, I could do it in a quick estimation. So when you start with the gold, the gold, you've got about 2.5 tons. Yeah, 2.5. And then when you get to the silver, you've got about 4.5. So you're pushing on 6 tons. 7 tons, thank you. And then when you get over to the bronze, you're going to be at about 13.5, actually a little more than that, over 13.5 tons, just in the metals, those three metals. The good news is they weren't all in, you didn't have to carry it as one big chunk. It was divided up into pieces and parts, but...
Was it carried only by the Levites?
Oh, now you broke my memory. There was a group of the Levites. Help me out, somebody remembers for sure. What my vague memory is, there was a group amongst the Levites that were responsible for moving the temple. But it wasn't all of the Levites, I don't believe. Anybody have that in their memory real quick? I don't have that exactly, but I'll bring that back next time. Who moved the tabernacle? Another thing that's worth saying somewhere along in here, and none of what I brought you really does it, but if you were able to see the finished tabernacle with all the silver base plates and all of the overlaid gold items and the solid gold items, I think it would be overwhelmingly uh, I don't even have a good word for it, but it, I think it would be quite the thing to see when it was all put together. Even the cloth work was pretty astounding. So let's take a look at some of this priestly garb. Let's start with 39. And I'm going to read through about 7 right now. We'll see where that takes us. Moreover, the blue and purple and scarlet material they made, finely woven garments for ministering in the holy place, as well as the holy garments which were for Aaron, just as the Lord had commanded Moses. He made the ephod of gold, of blue and purple and scarlet material and fine twisted linen. Then they hammered out gold sheets and cut them into threads to be woven with the blue and purple and scarlet material and with the fine linen, the work of a skillful workman. They made attaching shoulder pieces for the ephod, and it was attached at its 2 upper ends. The skillfully woven band, which was on it like its workmanship, of the same material of gold and blue and purple and scarlet material and fine twisted linen, just as the Lord commanded Moses. They made the onyx stones set in gold filigree settings. They were engraved like the engravings of the signet, according to the names of the sons of Israel. And he placed them on the shoulder pieces of the ephod, as mentioned, as memorial stones for the sons of Israel, just as the Lord had commanded Moses. And so if you look, this isn't a very big picture. I've got a better one that I'll probably bring next week. But you can see what's going on. He's got the ephod that's going to be an outer, is going to be the garment there that's going to have the stones on it, on the attachments at the shoulders. And then also, we'll get to in a little while, they make the breastplate that's going to also have the stones that are there as a memorial to the sons of Israel. In verse 8 begins the breast piece, and it says, he made the breast piece, the work of a skillful workman, like the workmanship of the ephod, of gold and a blue and purple and scarlet material and fine twisted linen. It was square. They made the breast piece folded double, a span long and a span wide when folded double. And they mounted 4 rows of stones on it. The first row was a row of ruby, topaz, and emerald, and the second row of turquoise, sapphire, and a diamond, and the third row of jacinth and agate and an amethyst, and the fourth row a beryl, an onyx, and a jasper. They were set in gold filigree settings when they were mounted. The stones were corresponding to the names of the sons of Israel. They were 12, corresponding to their names, engraved with the engravings of a signet, each with a name for the 12 tribes. They made on the breastplate chains-like cords of twisted cordage work in pure gold. They made 2 gold filigree settings and 2 gold rings, and put the 2 rings on the 2 ends of the breastpiece. Then they put the 2 gold cords in the 2 rings at the end of the breastpiece. They put the outer 2 ends of the 2 cords on the 2 filigree settings and put them on the shoulder pieces of the ephod at the front of it. They made 2 gold rings and placed them on the 2 ends of the breastpiece on its inner edge, which was next to the ephod. Furthermore, they made 2 gold rings and placed them on the bottom of the 2 shoulder pieces of the ephod, on the front of it, close to the place where it joined above the woven band of the ephod. They bound the breast piece by its rings so that it would be on the woven band of the ephod, and the breast piece would not come loose from the ephod, just as the Lord had commanded Moses. And so now we're still working on the upper portion of their garmentry, and they've constructed the ephod, and they've constructed this breast piece of gold. And it was interesting to me, too, that they wove the gold in the cloth, and that would be really quite something to see of that woven material that would, excuse me, that woven material, including that gold, would be pretty amazing stuff to look at. And if I pick it up in verse 22, then he made, whoops, sorry, I need to pick it up in, verse 22. Then he made the robe of the ephod of woven work, all of blue, and the opening of the robe was at the top of the center as the opening of a coat of mail, with a binding all around its opening so that it would not be torn. They made pomegranates of blue and purple and scarlet material and twisted linen on the hem of the robe. They also made bells of pure gold and put the bells between the pomegranates all around on the hem of the robe, alternating a bell and a pomegranate all around the hem of the robe for the service, just as the Lord had commanded Moses. And so now we've got the robe. It's the blue portion that's on, and it's got the pomegranates and bells around the bottom as were commanded. And they made tunics of finely woven linen for Aaron and his sons, and the turban of fine linen, and decorated caps of fine linen, and the linen breeches of the twisted linen, and the sash of fine twisted linen, and blue and purple and scarlet material, the work of the weaver, just as the Lord had commanded Moses. They made the plate of the holy crown of pure gold and inscribed it like the engravings of a signet, holy to the Lord. They fastened a blue cord to it to fasten it on the turban above, just as the Lord had commanded Moses. Thus all the work of the tabernacle of the tent of meetings was completed, and the sons of Israel did according to all that the Lord had commanded Moses. So they did. They brought the tabernacle to Moses, all the tent and its furnishings, its clasps, its boards, its bars, its pillars, its sockets, and the covering of ram skins dyed red, the covering of the porpoise skins and the screening veil, the ark of the testimony and its poles as the mercy seat, the table and all its utensils, the bread of the presence, the pure gold lampstand with its arrangement of lamps, all its utensils and the oil for the light, and the gold altar and the anointing oil and the fragrant incense and the veil for the doorway of the tent, the bronze altar and its bronze grating, its poles and all its utensils, the laver and its stand, the hangings for the court, its pillars and sockets, and the screen for the gate of the court, its cords and its pegs and all the equipment for the service of the tabernacle for the tent of meeting, the woven garments for ministering in the holy place, and the holy garments for Aaron and the priest, and the garments of his sons to minister as priests. So the sons of Israel did all the work according to all the Lord had commanded Moses. And Moses examined all the work, and behold, they had done it, just as the Lord had commanded this to be done. So Moses blessed them. And so here we see that they have done all of this work in detail. God gave them very direct instructions on how to build it, the dimensions, how it was to be made. Some of these things are a little hard for us to know exactly how they were put together. The description isn't always one we could paint a picture from, but all of these things were done just as God commanded Moses on the mountain. God gave that to the people, and this is one of the really good times for the people of Israel that they have performed just as God has commanded them. After a pretty scary time that they come out of worshiping a golden calf. Thoughts, comments?
But what sounds redundant to me is they counted the gold into sheets. Now that I can see happening. But then they cut it into thin...
Into threads?
Thin threads. We don't have... They wouldn't have had the tools like we would have today, but they used those threads to weave it into clothing. My goodness, how could they even... That's... I can't tell.
Because gold is the most malleable metal
Well, gold is malleable, and there's two things going on here that I want to say. One is we often overestimate the difference between our abilities today of being able to do things with automated machinery and what people could do then by hand. But that isn't the main thing to say. How did they get the abilities to do this according to the scriptures? God put it in the two men that he selected to lead. There may have only been one or two men in the whole world at that point in time that could do this. But there were two, one or two, that I'll guarantee you could. There may have been others. I'm not saying that they were technologically the only ones that could do it, but the amount of ability that was concentrated in these two men is just amazing.
Well, with God, everything's possible.
Everything is possible, and God made it clear who he wanted to do it, and he made it clear that he had put within them the ability to do it, and he not only gave them the ability to do it, the skill, but he gave them the wisdom that went with that from his spirit, so that not only could they do it, but they could lead the team and act like teachers and teach others to do what they needed for support. Good question, and an important thing to remember is God's Spirit's involvement in equipping them to be able to be obedient in making all this. Other questions, comments? Did you go find it for us?
Well, in Numbers chapter 1 is where Moses was instructed to number the males aged 20 and over.
Uh-huh.
So of all of the tribes except the Levites, that came to 603,550.
Right.
And the Levites, in my footnotes, it says, combined with the 22,000 Levite males, so there was about 22,000. And it says they were to carry the tabernacle.
Okay, all right. I thought there was a division of labor within the Levites, but maybe there wasn't. I don't have a strong enough memory of that.
Well, I thought one of them was the Kohathites or whatever were part of the worship. So there were some subdivisions.
There were some subdivisions amongst the Levites. The main one we know about is only Aaron and his sons would be in the temple or in the tabernacle doing things in the holy place. What's that?
What is an ephod?
The ephod, it's an upper part of a garment.
It's like a vest thing.
It's kind of like a vest. Yeah, yeah. So it's an upper part of the garment, and it then was attached at the shoulders so that it would stay on, so to speak. And at that attachments is where they put some of that jewels, the jewels and the filigree mountings for the gold. So there's multiple steps. I'll try to remember to do that that other drawing that shows these parts a little better, because I know that stuff's hard to follow just reading it. But we'll bring that. All right. Well, we'll see you next time. And this last chapter is their erection of the tabernacle, and there's some important things in here. So we'll look at that next time.